Invite you to turn your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 2. We come together this morning again. We gather. We are assembled by our old friend, and I don't mean that in a negative way, in an insult, our old friend, our old wise friend, Kohelet. For those of you who haven't been with us, the book of Ecclesiastes is written from the perspective of what chapter 1, verse 1 says, the teacher. This is the Hebrew word Kohelet. And Kohelet is more than just a teacher, it's a gatherer. It's somebody who assembles. And again, the picture that I have in mind that I would invite you to have as well is the picture of the patriarch or matriarch, the grandpa or grandma of a family who gathers his children, his grandchildren before himself to impart on them wisdom. He sees their lives and he sees that they're not walking in the right direction. He sees that they're making the same mistakes that he's made. He's made a bunch of mistakes in his life. He's tried to find fulfillment and meaning in all these different areas, and he sees them do the same thing. And he wants to stop them because he cares about them. We have the privilege this morning again to sit at Kohelet's feet. You know, what makes Kohelet's wisdom different than any old person's wisdom? People who age, the older they get, the grayer their hairs get, they gain perspective of life, okay? They gain perspective that I'm sure they see young people and they say, the young people don't get it. Have you heard that before? The young people don't get it. Youth is wasted on the young. Have you heard that before? You young have youth, but you waste it. And these old people, the gray-haired people, they see you make mistakes. And they want to correct you. And they want to tell you. And they want to instruct you. What makes Kohelet's instruction different than any other person, any other old person's instruction? Why should we listen to Kohelet more than other old people? I'm going to suggest to you that Kohelet not only has wisdom that he's gained from life, not only wisdom from living in the world, it has been a God-directed life. It has been a God-ordained life. God supernaturally wove together the pieces of his life in a way that really we can say doesn't happen very often. Maybe outside of Kohelet, it doesn't happen at all. We don't know, but we know for sure that he's had it. He's had a life that God directed, that God ordained, and God allowed these things, these perspectives to overtake him. And so really, when we listen to Kohelet, we are not just listening to an old person. We're listening to an old person who has eternity on his mind, put there by God himself, who's able to look backwards into the timeline of his life in that perspective, again, a God-directed perspective. And he's trying to give us insight. He's got insight into something beyond what we can see. Who doesn't want to listen to this? Who would turn to the book of Ecclesiastes and come face to face with Kohelet's teaching and not want to listen? Why is it that we read this and we say, oh, yeah, makes sense, and yet continue to go down the very same path that he tells us not to go down? Why would we do that? That's the definition of foolishness, of folly. And I put myself right there. Okay? I listen to this. I read it. It makes a lot of sense. But we all suffer from a disease. The disease is folly. The disease is stubbornness. We're stubborn and we know it. And really, if you would just admit it, that's, G.I. Joe says, knowing is half the battle, okay? Knowing that you're stubborn is a good place to start. Knowing that, yes, I want to learn, but something in me tells me to go my own way, to do it myself. I know Kohelet went down that road and failed. He searched for meaning in becoming learned and smart. And I'm going to dedicate myself to my academics. And I know Kohelet came up empty, but I'm not. I'm different. I know Kohelet's giving me perspective from God, but that's okay. I know that I can do it differently. Why is it that we do that? I know Kohelet, he pursued pleasure and indulgence and wealth, and he surrounded himself with all kinds of material things, and he came up empty. He came up empty. He came up wanting. He acquired more, but his appetite never was satisfied. And I know that he went down that road, but that's okay, because you know what? I'm going to do it differently, because I'm not Kohelet, because I'm going to do it better than Kohelet. Why do we do that? This is the definition of stubbornness and folly. And frankly speaking, this was the attitude of Israel. Israel had the same idea. Israel in the book of Judges, when they had no leadership, they had no spiritual direction, they had no spiritual compass. The author of the book of Judges says, and everyone in Israel did what was right in their own eyes. They were the ones, they themselves determined what is good and what is not good. They didn't listen to any kind of source. They didn't listen to God himself, God's word. They did it on their own. And we're just like them. And so we're reminded again of why Kohelet's words have value. Kohelet had an ear to the mouth of God, God whispering to Kohelet. Remember that thing you did? Let me tell you why it didn't work. Let me tell you how to process it. And let me tell you how to instruct your people. To instruct your people. We come to the end of chapter 2. We're in chapter 2, verse 12 to 26. And this is sort of a conclusion to this beginning journey. This beginning journey started in chapter 1 when he declared that everything in the world is meaningless. And he said, I was not satisfied, and so I searched for satisfaction. I searched for it in wisdom, in philosophy, in being learned, in being learning the ways of the world. And he said, look, I went down that path and I came up empty because I discovered that as the more I learned about the world, the more the world was a broken place. A broken place. Everything in the world is broken and it cannot be fixed. And I just got frustrated. So then he pivots and he says, I'm not going to search for meaning in that kind of stuff. I'm going to search for meaning. This is in the beginning of chapter 2. I'm going to search for meaning in pleasure and indulgence. I've got the money. I've got the means. I'm not limited by anything except my own appetite. And so he goes and he just lives it up and just surrounds himself with all kinds of things that bring him pleasure. And at the end of this process, he again comes up empty. He again comes up short and wanting and dissatisfied. He says, look, these things, they don't satisfy me. The more I acquire, the more I want. And then every single time I do that, I realize that I'm just inching closer and closer to death. And finally, we come to chapter 2, verse 12. Let me read that for us. This is his conclusion to this these two journeys here. He said, then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads while the fool walks in the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them all. Then I said to myself, The fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless. For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise must too, the wise too must die. So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And I know, and who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish, yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil, into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This, too, is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days, their work is grief and pain. Even at night, their minds do not rest. This, too, is meaningless. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat and find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless. A chasing after the wind. As you're listening to these words, sometimes it helps to read the Bible out loud, because when you do, you hear the cadence, you hear the refrain. When you're reading it just with your eyes and without sounding out the words, sometimes you miss that. This too is meaningless. This too is meaningless. This too is a chasing after the wind. You hear that? It's just this low drone in the background. This too is meaningless. What's meaningless? All of it. Kohelet says it's all meaningless. I searched for wisdom and I came up short. I searched for pleasure and I came up short. And in this section, he tells us one of the main reasons why these things don't satisfy. He tells it to us from the very beginning. And just listen, what is it that causes these things to not satisfy? Again, verse 12. I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom. This is now worldly wisdom. The end of chapter 1 when he searched for intelligence. He says, I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom. And I wasn't limited. What more can a king's successor do than what has already been done? He says, I searched for wisdom. I did it better than all of you because I was not limited by anything. I had access to everything. I had access to all the ancient documents. I had access to every ancient artifact. You know, we have Ethan back. I just saw Ethan. Ethan's back from school. He's in a graduate program studying history. I would imagine that as a graduate student in history, you need access to historical documents. And you need permission because they're under lock and key. And I don't know if Ethan has ever encountered it, but perhaps maybe at one point he went to some famous library, the Library of Congress or whatever it is that he goes to, and he says, my name is Ethan Yee, and I want access to these documents. And maybe they said, no, you cannot until I see this and this and this. Then maybe you can have access. Solomon didn't have that problem. Kohelet had access. And so Kohelet says, what can a king's successor do more than all what already has been done? In other words, I had it all. I saw it all. And I discovered in verse 13, he said, look, all else being equal, I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. Look, all else being equal, I searched for wisdom, and then I searched for foolishness, which is sort of the pleasure side. He puts these two at odds. And he says, you know what? Look, let's be frank. Wisdom is just better than the folly stuff. just as light is better than dark. It's just self-evident. But he says in verse, the end of 14, but I came to realize that the same fate overtakes both of them. I said to myself, the fate of the fool overtake me. What's the fate? What fate? The fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless. For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise must die too. That, folks, is the perspective that Kohelet has, the perspective that you gain as you enter into old age. That changes everything. Kohelet realized that no matter if I was searching for wisdom or if I was searching for pleasure, the fact of the matter is death overtakes both of them. The story for both ends the same way. And that changes your perspective. Now in this room, we have young, we have very young, and we have also older. We don't really have very old, okay? We have older folks. As you age, as you grow, as you start to decay, as you start to encounter physical problems, your perspective changes, doesn't it? Doesn't your perspective about life, about what's important, change? I heard a story once about my parents. Keep in mind, because my mother died when I was young, I can honestly say I don't really know her, okay? I remember her, what she looks like. I can't remember her voice. I can't remember her personality. I was very young. So other people who knew my mother would tell me stories about my mother. And they would tell me, one time this woman said to me, years later, she says, oh, your mother was a wonderful woman. I said, I know. But really, I'm thinking, yeah, I've heard. She says, your mother was a wonderful, so faithful, such a good wife to your father. And really what she meant was, hint, hint, your father, he did well. He lucked out. He got the better end of the deal. Okay? No, I've heard that too. And at one point, my mother, who was extremely submissive to my father, not as a subservient, but as a wife who submits to her husband. She listened to him. She allowed him to direct the household. My father was cheap. He was frugal. Okay? Everything can be mended. Everything can be fixed. Everything can be reused. We don't need new things. And so my mother didn't have new things. And at one point, I think as the story goes, she needed a dress for some something. Maybe her one dress was torn or ripped. So she needed a dress. So she went to Sears. And I don't know why, but the place that she went to was stuck in my head. Sears, who's closing stores now, okay? Sears, 40 years ago, was still around. And she went to Sears and she bought a dress. And it was for $14 or something like that. And she brought it home and my father scolded her. And said, why do we need a new dress? You don't need a new dress. Your dress can be fixed. Take it back. And my mother thought, you know what, I earn money too. I have a job too. We both have work. But I will listen to you. So she took it back. And this woman is telling me this story with tears in her eyes. How obedient and how trying to be a good wife your mother was to your father. All right. So that's the story. And I thought, wow. It's not just fear of him. It's inner strength to be able to submit yourself to someone who you don't even agree with, but for the sake of the marriage, you agree. You do what was asked. Years later, long after my mother passed away, my father used to tell me, when I die, you will have nothing. So why? He said, I'm going to spend it all. And I said, what? I'm going to spend all my money, so when I die, you have nothing. I said, okay, go for it. Have fun. You don't even have that much anyway, but yeah, have at it, okay? What changed? How does he go from you spent $14 for a dress because your one dress was broken and messed up and you needed a new dress? Look, she needed a dress. How do you go from take it back to I'm now going to spend all my money, which never happened, okay? But how do you go from that? Because you encounter death, and death changes your perspective. There's a finality to death that makes you realize, look, we're spending so much energy living for right now, but every single day we're approaching the same fate. The same fate overtakes us all. Everybody's story in this room, everybody's story ends on a downer. But more importantly than the fact that it's a depressing idea, it's the idea that when you come face to face with this, you start to think differently. You start to value different things. And Kohelet, as he approached death, he said to himself, look, this changes everything. You spend your energy pursuing this because you think it's important. You spend your energy pursuing this because you think it's important. And you realize they're both actually not in different directions. They're heading in the same direction. They're going straight to death. And death will overtake them both. And he says, this, friends, is meaningless. It's meaningless. 16, for the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise too must die. How often do we hear the story? It's a common story. How often do we hear the story of somebody who comes face to face with death, maybe in a car accident or maybe in some sort of illness, and all of a sudden, really, we say, oh, I see life differently now. I hear the birds chirping. We have really loud birds in our yard every morning. They just go to town. And we had a guest over recently whose window was open, and he came downstairs in the morning. He said, man, those birds are loud. I said, yeah, I know. Oh, but well, you come face to face with some sort of a brush with death, and you hear the birds chirping. Oh, so beautiful. So beautiful. No, they're loud. No, they're so beautiful. You come face to face with some sort of tragedy, some sort of a close encounter with death, and all of a sudden, those things that used to be annoying now are endearing. They're precious now. Your son who annoys you, oh, it's precious now. Annoy me more, please. This morning, one of my children just kept singing. Nothing. Just, yeah. See, I use the word singing loosely. He was making intonations with his voice. And I said, why are you so loud? Because I like it. It's annoying. I said, yes, it is annoying. You know that. Oh, I'm glad you realize that. Come face to face with death. It's not annoying anymore. It's beautiful. It's give me more. You come face to face with death, perspective changes. On the one hand, you start to see life differently. On the other hand, you start to see the afterlife differently. And that's where Kohelet is. And all I can do, I now consider it advantageous for me, not a blessing so much as it's advantageous for me that I've encountered it multiple times in my life from a very young age. And it's not that it's given me some sort of perspective that Kohelet doesn't have, but I would also say that it's allowed me to speak about it in a very real way. I think absolutely my mom's passing, my father's passing, my grandmother's passing, my grandfather's passing affected me significantly. It caused me to evaluate things differently. And you don't need to encounter that to be changed. You just need to listen. You just need to listen. We keep going here. From verse 17, Kohelet says, "So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun, it was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish? Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil, into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune." A couple more verses here. "What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days, their work is grief and pain. Even at night, their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless." From verses 18 to 23, he turns a corner. He changes, he pivots here. He's been talking about death. He still talks about death. But he talks about death now in relation to one aspect of many of our lives. There is a particular Hebrew word, amal, which is used two times in every verse from 18 to 23. 12 times from 18 to 23. Kohelet says, "My perspective about this has changed because of my brush with death." Can you see it? What's the word? Two times in every verse. This is a little bit of a Bible study here. Anybody see it? What's it? Labor. Labor. Exactly. Verse 18, "I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. Who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish? Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil, into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor." Toils, that's the toilsome labor is the laboring of my labor, okay? The products of my labor. "For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, then they must leave it to another who has not labored for it. This too is meaningless. What do people get for all the labor and anxious striving with which they labor for under the sun? All their days, their work is grief and pain." Kohelet says, when you come face to face with death, and you consider the fact that death overtakes everybody, nobody is immune to it. Nobody this side of the resurrection will ever be cured from death. You could be cured from cancer. You could be cured from heart disease. Can you be cured from heart disease? Yeah, maybe not. Okay, you can treat heart disease. You can control it. You can be cured from all sorts of stuff, okay? But you can't be cured from death. It overtakes everybody. So Kohelet says, you know what, folks? When I started to realize that, my view of work changed. My view of work changed. This, again, is one of these things we need to take to heart. We give our lives to our work. And Kohelet says here, one of the reasons why work, the perspective about work changes is because you work so hard, and then when you die, you leave your work to somebody else. You leave the fruit of your labor to somebody else. And who knows whether that person will be foolish or wise. Now, again, I think what he's thinking about is inheritance. He's worked so hard to amass a certain amount of wealth, and he's thinking about his son, okay? He's like, I don't know if my son's going to do good with this or not. And that bothers me. Turns out that his son particularly the one who became king, Rehoboam, was a fool. We know that because the Bible tells us that he's a fool. And he begins to, but Kohelet begins to sort of lament. Boy, you know, we spend so much energy on our work when the fact is that we're all going to be facing the same fate. You know, this is one of those things where it is a call for us at this moment to consider what are you investing your time in, really? It's not my place, really, because I don't know what you do, not everybody. I don't know how you spend your free time. But I think it's fair for you to evaluate yourself. Does work have its proper place in your life? Or does work consume you? Have you yet had a brush with death? Are you listening to Kohelet who says, when you come face to face with death, your perspective about work changes? Work, you're chasing after fulfillment at work, and work is meaningless. It's meaningless. This chasing is chasing after the wind. You're not going to catch it. This is not to say, I want to make sure I'm very clear, this is not to say that somehow because if you don't work in some sort of something with eternal value, somehow your work is less than. I wouldn't say that at all, ever. Whatever it is that you do, whether you work in a bank or you work in a hospital or you work in a law firm or you work in an accounting or wherever it is you work in a tech company, I always say to myself and to these people, I'm thinking about working in this place. What do you think? I said, well, look, they need, that place of business needs good Christians in that business. If we take all the Christians out, then those places become dark. They need you in there. They need you to be a light. They need you to be a presence. They need you to be a voice on behalf of God. They need that. Go and do it. But it's not about where you work. It's about how you consider your work. It's about whether or not you can separate work from home, work from other things. I think this is a frankly speaking, a problem with the busyness of life that we find ourselves in here in the Bay Area. We can't leave it at work. Whatever it is that we do, we tend to bring it home and we mull it over and we think about it. How great would it be if we could just do the work and then leave work and it's at work? I'm not thinking about it. My job, right out of college, I worked as a chemist, as a wet chemist at a biopharmaceutical company. And it was entry-level chemistry. It was in quality control chemistry. And every day I had certain tasks to do. But my work was so low-level, it was entry-level, that I never took it home. I clocked in, and I clocked out. And when I clocked out, I left it. Okay? I started something, and I left. I don't have to think about it until tomorrow morning. So I could do whatever I wanted. Wow, how freeing it was to feel like that. The problem is most people's jobs don't stay like that. The higher you get, the more responsibility you get at work, the longer you've been at work, the older you are. Those kinds of jobs, to have that kind of freedom and release, it's very rare. Because more often than not, now you bring it home. And let me ask you a question. For those of you who do bring your work home with you, does it make you a better husband, wife, father, mother, brother, or sister when you do that? Are you better? Are you more effective in those other relationships? This is the kind of stuff, folks. He doesn't give us very, very specific instruction, but he's just causing us. He's laying the seed for us to consider. Have you come to recognize that when you invest yourself in these things, they amount to very meaningless types of return? Years ago, we had a brother who had just started coming to our church, but it was a wonderful, wonderful man. And I really liked getting to know him. He was a little bit older than me, and he had a child. We didn't have children at the time. And at one point, he had been here for about 6 months with his family, maybe a year. And he said to me, "Hey, Eddie, I want to let you know I'm leaving. I'm leaving CCGC." I said, "Oh, what? Sorry to see you go. What's going on?" He's like, "I'm taking a job elsewhere." I said, "Oh, so you guys are moving away?" He's, no. My family's going to stay here. We like it here. My family's going to stay, but I'm going to move away for 2 years. Boy, you're leaving your family for 2 years? He said, "Yeah, you know, I'll try to come back once a month." And, you know, and this was a faithful Christian. I knew that he had eternal values. I knew that he had made the ultimate determination that at this point, the ROI was in favor of him moving, okay? The return on the investment. The return on the investment of leaving, the return, the whatever it is that would cost his children with the father being gone, it was worth it. And I'm sorry, I'm going to admit to you, I was really sad. I thought, wow, you're leaving for 2 years. 2 years, and then your idea is that in 2 years, you will develop enough business skill in whatever field he was in that somehow you'll be able to come back and get a better job here in 2 years' time. So in the next 2 years, your mother's going to be a single mother for three children with no husband. And you're going to be a single man with no wife, with no... 2 years. Whoa, man, that's a long time. And I was really sad about that. I didn't want to say anything because I don't want to make him feel like I'm judging you, because it doesn't say here specifically, don't do that. It doesn't say here, Kohelet doesn't say, don't move away for 2 years for your work. It doesn't say that. But he did it. Within 3 months, his wife came to me and he said, "Eddie, I wanted to tell you, we're moving." I said, "You are?" He said, "Yes, we're moving to be with the husband. We really like it here, but we're moving away to be together." I thought to myself, yeah! Good decision! I like that! I don't like it when people choose work over family. It's not a good choice. It's not a good choice. It's meaningless. It's chasing after the wind. It's not a good choice. I was so happy that they left. Go quick. Can I help you move? The sooner the better. Now again, please, I can't speak to every situation. I'm not trying. If you're in this scenario where you're thinking about this, I'm not trying to say that there's only one way to do it. But it seems to be here, Kohelet is telling us, when you have my perspective, when you're at the end of your life, when you've seen it all and done it all, your perspective about work changes. And it would do you well to listen to Kohelet. We finish up here in verse 24. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, the chasing after the wind. At this point, Kohelet's conclusion to the chasing after these types of things for satisfaction, he comes to a very simple conclusion. And frankly speaking, one that I like. He says in verse 24, a person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their work. There's a message of simplicity here. He says, look, when you come to the end of your life and you have perspective, like I have perspective, Kohelet says, I've come to realize, you know those little moments you just get to enjoy? you enjoy a glass of wine. You enjoy a moment of peace. You enjoy the flowers, the birds that are singing. You enjoy your family, and even enjoy maybe perhaps your work. And when you keep it in perspective, that's really that's a gift from God to be able to enjoy that. Because most people are like verse 23. All their days, their work is grief and pain. They work so hard, they come home, grief and pain speaks of physical grief and pain, okay? But then even at night, their minds do not rest. That's mental grief and pain. You've got two kinds. And he says most people are like that. They work so hard so that they come home and they're sore and everything hurts. And then they put their head down at night. Maybe then they get some reprieve from their pain and from their grief. No, they don't. They can't sleep. Their mind is restless. He said, that's not the way to live. He says, you know what? To be able to find enjoyment in moments, in rest, in peace, that's a gift from God. That's what I want. That's what I've come to realize is a value. To find moments of rest and peace, that too is a gift from God. I've come to adopt a middle name for myself. It's a word that I've come to really like, and it's the word relax. Not to be lazy, but to relax. There's a moment of my day, every day, I look forward to it. After we have a routine, right? You come home from work and you get dinner ready. That's her, Cindy's department. She gets dinner ready. I try to help with the boys with homework or whatever it is that they're occupying them until dinner's ready. Then we eat dinner. And then after dinner, I begin to clean. The boys are with Cindy and they're doing whatever else that they're doing, maybe playing toys or doing their homework again. Zachary's got homework to do. And I'm cleaning the kitchen, and I try to be like a tornado. Just let me focus in. Give me 20 minutes of just let me get this kitchen done so that at 8 o'clock we can go and shower and then get the boys ready for bed. And then when everything is done, take a deep breath. The day's over. I try to tell particularly Zachary, like, look, let's get this done first. The things that you need to do, your work, let's get it done. Let's get it done first so that we can relax, so that we can sit and put our feet up and just read a book or watch a little TV or enjoy some fruit, nice conversation, and just relax. We want to get there. But in order to get there, we've got to do some stuff. We've got to put in the work. But let's work really hard. Let's not delay it so that we can get there. And I find that moment when the boys are asleep, it's very nice. It's very peaceful. And I listen to these words. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink. Kohelet is my friend. Eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. You know, this morning, as we come to the conclusion of this couple of chapters here, we're going to take a break from Kohelet for the next couple of weeks. But he has brought before you opportunities for perspective, for self-evaluation. And the question for you is now, what do you do with this? You keep going down the path that you're going. You can do that. But I think chances are good you're going to find yourself empty. You're going to find yourself concluding at the end of your days that was meaningless. It was chasing after the wind. It was investing myself in things that don't matter. And now here's the fallout. The fallout, Solomon, Kohelet, he was not a good father. We know that. He did not train and teach and love his children well. We know that. So he experiences that fallout, and he's trying to tell us something. It behooves us to listen. Let's pray.